I thought we could sing a song while everybody's coming in. Those cleaning the music room back here have already located these very old songbooks that I remember from my youth, youth's favorite songs. And one of my favorites in here is maybe a favorite of yours also, Spirit of the Living God, Fall Afresh on Me. Spirit of the Living God, fall afresh on me. Melt me, mold me, fill me, use me. Spirit of the Living God, fall afresh on me. So let's sing that as a kind of prayer as we begin Bible study. Spirit of the Living God, fall afresh on me. Welcome, everyone. My name is Barbara Brossing, and I serve the village as one of the teaching staff coordinators for this summer, and I'm really delighted to be here at this dream now taking place work camp that we've been thinking about for so long. I just came here from the seminary where I teach in Chicago, the Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago. We had graduation last Sunday. How many of you have been to a graduation this spring or graduated or something? It's the season. Okay. All right, well, we had graduation next Sunday, and now we're going back to school. That's one of the pillars of this work camp experience, I think, that we had worship last night, work during the day, and that school or study is part of our experience of the at Holden Village. And what we're going to be doing these 2 weeks of work camp is looking at the theme of the wilderness school. The people of Israel, after the liberation from Egypt, the exodus from Egypt, journeyed for 40 years in the wilderness, our Holden theme this summer. And during those 40 years, this ragtag bunch of refugees was schooled for the promised land, schooled by God for the land ahead, for God's way of life, schooled in daily lessons of grace, glimpses of God's promise of grace, God's abundant mercy in the wilderness classroom. And I hope you'll get a chance to pick up Dan Erlander's book in the bookstore, Manna and Mercy. He has really wonderful cartoon pictures in here of the people in the wilderness sitting around at their little desks in the wilderness classroom, and the animals are there as well. It's quite wonderful. And Dan Erlander is going to be leading the Bible study Wednesday and the rest of this week and then next week. And I'm doing these 2 days. But anyway, that we're looking at the wilderness as lessons that we can take with us for the next 40 years of our lives, wherever that is, lessons of Sabbath, lessons of Jubilee, lessons of abundance, lessons of covenant, and most of all, the lesson of manna. Dan is going to be wonderful on that, how the manna lessons of things like you can't hoard it. It comes to you new every morning. God gives it as a new gift. And during these 12 days of work camp, Dan Erlander is going to be leading us through wilderness school back to remembering and recalling the lessons that the people of Israel learned. And we'll be following with them through the Bible stories of the Exodus and the wilderness journey, stories of Moses and Miriam. We heard last night stories of Abraham and Lot, stories of Jesus that can also be stories of grace for your life. How does that happen? Why are we putting Bible study in the middle of the day? How does it happen that these old stories, the Old Testament stories about people who lived some 4,000 years ago, if they lived at all, lost in the desert of Sinai, hungry and grumbling, wandering around thousands of miles away, how do these stories become transformative for us? Why are we looking at these Bible stories as part of our Holden Village experience? How does our week or weeks here in this wilderness of Holden Village, you've got pictured on this beautiful banner here from Kristen Gellia, how do our weeks of pounding or digging or sawing or hauling or cleaning or wiring or tending, whatever you're doing this week, how do these become then a window into God's ancient wilderness experience, that ancient wilderness school where God taught lessons of abundant life that can still bring grace to us today? How are Israel's lessons, those old, old lessons, how do they become living stories for us today? And I want to just begin this week by saying, I think you're here because that has happened in your life. You have had those glimpses of gathering together with other people to study the scriptures, to look at God's story, and to place your own story into that story. And you know what it is to glimpse how Bible stories become living stories for you. And that's why I teach in a seminary, to see that happen with students. That's why I come again and again to Holden, because that happens for me here in this place. And we're bold enough to hope that it will happen for you again this week. That the words of the Bible on the page will become for you as you work side by side with your neighbor, meeting new friends, old friends, as you worship together in this community, that the words will become living words for you, and these old stories will become living stories. Suddenly, your eyes will be opened to see that happen, to see the words come up from the page for you, and it will be one of those sort of aha moments, a glimpse of God's presence in your life, when the whole cosmic story of God's history with the world and with Israel and with all the people of the world becomes your story also. I carry around with me one of these magic eyes. Have you seen these before? This is the one from the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago where I live. One of my favorites. You know, it's a beautiful blue and turquoise kind of abstract picture if you look at it just like this. But this is one of those pages where and some people can't do this, and that's fine, but if you hold it up and then blur your eyes and gradually pull it away, what you see suddenly is the picture in three dimensions. What looks like just blue and turquoise shapes on a page, there's two dolphins jumping here, and there's a whale diving down here. And it's the magic eye. It's the picture taking on a whole third dimension. I think that's how it is with biblical stories when this happens, that the story also becomes this third, three-dimensional picture that you can enter this text, and you are there back with Israel in the wilderness school. You are there as the manna falls, and you wake up in the morning and there it is lying on the ground, and this is a sign of God's abundant grace for you. That's how the biblical text takes life for us. Or look at this picture, for example. I mean, it's three flat silk sheets. It's our wilderness place here at Holden Village, but we're going to somehow during these weeks take this wilderness and pull it away where those sheets separate, and we're going to walk back into that picture through the Holden wilderness, back in a timeline that takes us back into Israel's journey through the wilderness, back into Israel's wilderness school, and we're going to meet God in this wilderness as we learn lessons that we can take then out into our lives. Dan Erlander is going to mainly do the Old Testament stories with you. And since I'm a New Testament scholar, what I want to do today is look at one of my favorite New Testament texts that I think is an example of that kind of glimpsing, one of those aha moments where you get that sort of magic eyesight, where suddenly what looks like just a flat page becomes an experience of meeting Jesus. And sort of the paradigm story for that is in Luke 24. I'm sure this is a favorite story for many of you, the Emmaus journey, where the vision of the disciples who weren't able to see past the flat page is suddenly transformed, and they see Jesus walking with them on their Emmaus walk. And we are bold enough to hope that that is what will happen for you here this week, that as you're walking up that diversion dam road, as you're walking down the road to work on whatever messy project it is, as you're crawling around in the crawl space trying to dig and you don't have enough room to stand up, that somehow you'll glimpse in the neighbor next to you an aha moment of Jesus' presence in your life. In the Gospel of Luke, I'm going to do a Greek word here. The word for that kind of sight, that aha kind of sight, where you recognize Christ in your midst, is called epigenosis. And let me just read the text here from Luke 24. Jesus has been crucified, and it's now the third day, and nothing has happened. And the disciples are losing hope. They think nothing has happened. Now, on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And that word for recognizing is this Greek word, epigenosis, that Luke also gives us at the very beginning of the Gospel of Luke, in the first chapter, when he tells us why he's writing the Gospel. It's so that you may see, you may recognize Jesus. And the word there also is epigenosis. So the whole purpose of Luke's Gospel, he tells us, is this kind of recognition, this kind of sight. But the disciples' eyes were kept from recognizing him. Oh, and I want to say the other thing about this text is that only the name of only one of these disciples is given, Cleopas, who's not one of the 12, not one of the big shot disciples. These are, you know, the unknown disciples, Cleopas. And then the other one is not even named. We don't know who it is. It could be Cleopas's wife. I'd like to think there's a woman in this picture. But I think when Luke leaves someone unnamed like this, it's so that you can see yourself in this picture. You as the reader, this is where each of us is in this story. We're that second unnamed disciple. And then Jesus is the third. He joins us and he's walking with us the wrong direction, out of town. I mean, these disciples are walking away from Jerusalem, even though Jesus has expressly told them, stay in Jerusalem until you receive the power of the Spirit. They're going the wrong way, out of town, and Jesus is willing to walk with them the wrong direction. I think that's kind of great. So he falls in with them. And he says to them, what are you discussing with each other while you walk along? They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days? He asked them, what things? They replied, the things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. So the disciples now tell Jesus the story, and they have the facts of the story right, but they can't get the big picture. They don't see how this story fits into the big picture, and they're all dejected. And then they say, but we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Dot, dot, dot. And the implication is, but I guess he's not. And I think that phrase there, we had hoped, when we're honest with ourselves, so often sums up our life. We bring to this text, and bring yourself to this text definitely, one of the things we bring to these texts are all those we had hoped of our own life, all the things that didn't work out how we had hoped. We had hoped that we would get that job, but we didn't. We had hoped that relationship would work out, but it didn't. We had thought world peace would be here by now. We've been working on it for 20 years, for heaven's sakes, and it's not. We had hoped to make a difference on things like the environment, world hunger, climate change, but it looks like we didn't. We had hoped. And you can fill it in for your own life. That's what you bring to this text. As you walk on that road, the wrong direction out of town, just tell Jesus all those we had hoped, and how it looks like it's not happening. Because then what Jesus can do is take that story and lay it in a bigger story. And they continue, yes, and besides all this, it's now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some of the women of our group astounded us, you know, obviously discredited witness here. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they didn't find his body, they came back and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who even said that he was alive. Some of us who went to the tomb to check it out and found it just as the women had said, but didn't see him. So they even know about the empty tomb. They know the whole story. But what's missing is the piece that can help them put it all together. And Jesus says, how slow of heart you are to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. He takes them back to the Old Testament, just like Dan Erlander is going to take you back to the Old Testament through the manna story here, this wonderful story of the Exodus and the 40 years in the wilderness. He takes them back to Moses and leads them then through the scriptures to see how the big story does still make sense and how the death of Jesus is part of God's big story, the death and empty tomb. He interprets to them all the things about himself in the scriptures. He places their story, all their we had hoped, into this biblical story of Moses and the prophets and God's love for the world that we read in the scriptures. And he helps them to see that the death of Jesus is not the end of the story. The story continues, and it's continuing on even as they walk. Then comes the wonderful second part of this text, and I'm sure you know this story as well. As they came near the village to which they were going, Jesus walked ahead as if he were going on. And I love that. He's willing to look like he's going to continue walking in the wrong direction with them as far as they want to take him in the wrong direction. But they urge him strongly, saying, stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over. And you know this wonderful verse, stay with us. It's one of the Teze chants that we sing sometimes Friday in the prayer around the cross. Stay with us. It's almost evening. The day is now nearly over. So he went in to stay with them. And what's wonderful about this too is that the disciples now are offering Jesus hospitality. Even though their lives are broken and dejected, even in the midst of their pain and their hopes that they think haven't come true, they are offering Jesus hospitality. And that's what this story helps us to see also, that we can do, is offer to others accompaniment and hospitality, even in the midst of our brokenness. That's why we're fixing up all these buildings, is in order to be able to offer hospitality to the many, many villagers who are going to come this summer and the next 40 years. So the disciples offer hospitality to Jesus. He goes in to stay with them. And when he was at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. And this then is the word epigenosis, that they were kept from recognizing him earlier during the walk, but suddenly now, in the breaking of the bread, and why it is, I mean, we don't know if it was just such a trademark gesture that Jesus did, the bread breaking that he's done, you know, he's done in the feeding of the 5,000, he's done it at the many, many meals he's been with them at through Luke's gospel. Somehow in the bread breaking, this is that aha moment when the picture opens up and they see what had been there in front of them all along. It was Jesus walking with them. They just didn't recognize him. They didn't have that epigenosis, but in the bread breaking now, is that aha moment. Their eyes are opened and they recognize him, and he vanished from their sight. Then they said to each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us? So now, based on this aha experience that they've had at the bread breaking, Now they can look back at the walk on the road and see how it was Jesus with them all along. And indeed, their hearts were burning within them as he walked with them on the road, but they didn't realize it. That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed and has appeared to Simon." So Jesus was meanwhile appearing back in Jerusalem, and now all the different groups can put their stories together about how Jesus has appeared to them. This is what can happen for you during your work and this work camp. This kind of epigenosis. It will happen this week in those unexpected moments, and you might not even realize it right away, like the disciples didn't realize that their hearts had been burning within them all along. The story began for us at the Lord's table last night when at the altar in the center of this room, bread was broken and you were given a taste of Christ's presence. But the Emmaus story is a good reminder to us. It doesn't just happen in bread breaking. It can happen in every bread breaking. I mean, as you ate your blueberry muffin today, meeting a new person, hopefully, it'll happen in the dining hall. It happens in all those tables of our lives. And it happens as we walk on the road, sharing honestly with each other the hopes that we bring to this week, even those that don't seem to be coming true. We are convinced that during this week, you can have that kind of experience walking on the Holden Road, walking on the Diversion Dam Road, that suddenly on your work crew, the person hacking away with those clippers, with their safety glasses on. Oops, I forgot to wear my safety glasses. Well, anyway, that person working side by side with you is Jesus. Unexpectedly, there with you. And now you can look back over your whole story and say, with this kind of new vision, these new eyes, did not our hearts burn within us as he worked with us on the third level, as he walked with us, as he opened to us the scriptures? And that's what we want to do during the Bible study each day, is open the scriptures with new eyes, with this very refreshing spirit that Dan Erlander brings these texts, so that it becomes then a story that is not just the story of Israel in the wilderness, not just the story of lost people wandering around some 40 years ago, but it becomes also your story. As you see through the picture of the Holden Wilderness, looking back into that third dimension, you see Israel, and you see yourself walking with the Israelites through that desert experience, going back to school with them, setting up your little desk in your work area or wherever it is, learning again those manna lessons of abundance, and seeing that side by side with you in unexpected places. I mean, the disciples could not recognize it. They were not expecting it. And we don't know why Jesus was so different looking that they couldn't see him. But they couldn't. And this is sort of the paradigm story for all of us. A reminder that Christ will be with us in our work crews, in our lodges, wherever you are, unexpectedly, in that person that you don't expect. So as you go through this week, lay your story inside the big story. Take that magic eye, if it's this banner or whatever, hold it up, let your eyes blur, and then slowly pull it away. And look at the picture of those dolphins jumping, of the whale diving down, of Jesus walking with you, giving you, once again, manna in the wilderness for your journey. Jesus is with you in that crawl space. Jesus is with you as you rip out that chalet porch. Jesus is with you in the Lodge One project on the third level. And epigenosis is the eyes of faith that are given to see that. Amen.